Brideshead Revisited by Evelyn Waugh, adapted for radio by Jeremy Front, with Ben Miles as Charles, Jamie Bamber as Sebastian, and Edward Petherbridge as Lord Marchmain. Episode 4.
All night, between dreaming and waking, I thought of Julia. In my brief dreams, she took on 100 fantastic, terrible, and obscene forms. But in my waking thoughts, she returned with her sad, starry head, just as I had seen her that evening at dinner. I slept for an hour or two, then awoke clear-headed, with a joyous sense of anticipation.
Your breakfast, sir?
Splendid.
Oh, there's a lot of stuff in the sitting room for the lady. Flowers and parcels sent up from the shop. Shall I leave them for the time being?
Yes. Could you arrange for a barber to be sent up to shave me?
Very well, sir.
Flowers, eh? Kedgeree.
I'd better get that.
Yes, sir.
Hello?
What a deplorable thing to do, Charles. How unlike you.
Don't you like them?
What can I do with roses on a day like this?
Smell them.
They've absolutely no smell at all.
What have you had for breakfast?
Muscat, grapes and cantaloupe.
When shall I see you?
Before lunch. I'm busy till then with a masseuse. What is it about being on a boat that makes everyone behave like a film star? And how about these very embarrassing roses?
Put them in a vase.
Right, sir. Head back.
What a life of pleasure. Roses, half an hour with a female pugilist, and now champagne.
I do wish you wouldn't go on about the roses. It wasn't my idea in the first place. Someone sent them to Celia.
Oh, well, that's quite different. It lets you out completely. Actually, I'm glad about the roses, but they were a shock. They made me think we were starting the day on the wrong foot.
Well, here's to the right foot.
The right foot.
All that day, Julia and I spent together, talking, scarcely moving, held in our chairs by the swell of the sea. We lunched together the next day, parted briefly during the afternoon, and met once again for dinner, and she told me of her life with Rex.
Oh, he's never been unkind to me intentionally. He couldn't imagine why it hurt me to find 2 months after we came back from our honeymoon that he was still keeping up with Brenda Champion.
I was glad when I found Celia was unfaithful. I felt it was all right for me to dislike her.
Do you? I'm glad. I don't like her either. Why did you marry her?
Physical attraction, ambition. Everyone agrees she's the ideal wife for a painter.
Was that all?
Loneliness. Missing Sebastian.
You loved him, didn't you?
Oh, yes. He was the forerunner.
He's disappeared completely. Cordelia's in Spain with an ambulance. Bridie leads his own extraordinary life.
Bridie.
He wanted to shut Brideshead after Mummy died, but Papa wouldn't have it. So Rex and I live there now. And Bridie has 2 rooms up in the dome next to Nanny Hawkins.
What happened between you and Rex?
I wasn't at all the article he'd bargained for. Last year, when I thought I was going to have a child, I decided to have it brought up a Catholic. I hadn't thought of religion before, I haven't since. But just at that time, when I was waiting for the birth, I thought, well, that's one thing I can give her. It doesn't seem to have done me much good, but my child can have it. In the end, I couldn't even give her that. I couldn't even give her life.
I'm sorry.
I never saw her. I was too ill to know what was going on. For a long time, until now, I didn't want to speak about her. She was a daughter, so Rex didn't mind so much her being dead.
Julia...
I've been punished a little for marrying Rex.
You don't really believe that.
I can't get all that sort of thing out of my mind quite. Death, judgment, heaven, hell, Nanny Hawkins and the catechism. And yet I wanted my child to have it. Now I suppose I'll be punished for what I've just done. Perhaps that's why you and I are here together like this. Part of a plan. Time for bed, I think. Well, good night.
It doesn't have to be.
No, Charles, not yet. Perhaps never. I don't know. I don't know if I want love.
Love? I'm not asking for love.
Yes, Charles, you are. Good night.
Next day, the wind had again dropped. In the evening, the clouds dispersed, and the sun suddenly broke into the lounge where we sat. Julia rose and led me up to the boat deck.
Sunset. The end of our day.
Turn about the deck? Oh, here, take me off.
Yes, Charles. Now.
It was no time for the sweets of luxury. They would come in their season. Now, on the rough water, there was a formality to be observed, no more.
Charles! Charles, I feel so well. I'm afraid I've been a worthless wife to you the last 2 days. What have you been up to? Have you been behaving? You haven't been picking up sirens.
There was scarcely a woman about. I spent most of my time with Julia.
Oh, good. Oh, I always wanted to bring you two together. She's one of my friends I knew you'd like. I expect you were a godsend to her.
I don't know about that.
She's had rather a gloomy time lately. I'll ask her to lunch today with Miles and Janet in our sitting room.
I did not speak to Julia alone until we met for a minute next day, while everyone else crowded to gaze at the green coastline of Devon.
What are your plans?
London for a bit.
Celia's going straight home. She wants to see the children.
You too?
No.
In London, then?
Oh, but Charles, you must come. You haven't seen Caroline.
Will she change much in a week or two?
Darling, she changes every day.
Then what's the point of seeing her now? I'm sorry, but I must get the pictures unpacked and see how they've travelled. I need to fix up for the exhibition right away. I'm sorry, Celia.
It's very disappointing.
You look preoccupied.
Not really.
Don't worry. I'm sure it'll be a tremendous success.
Well, if Celia's got anything to do with it. Frankly, I'm sick of the pictures already.
She sent me a card with "Bring Everyone" written across it in green ink. Do you want me to come?
I'd much rather you didn't.
Well, here we are.
Thanks.
Charles! There you are. Whose car was that?
Julia's.
Julia's?
She spotted me in Hay Hill and picked me up.
Oh, why didn't you bring her in?
She said something about a dress fitting.
Oh. Well, oddly enough, I've just been talking about Brideshead to a funny little man who seemed to know us very well. A Mr. Sam Grass.
Oh, God. Who invited him?
Apparently he's one of Lord Copper's middle-aged young men on the Daily Beast.
He's a crook.
That stuck out a mile. He's been talking all about what he calls the Brideshead set. Apparently Rex Mottram has made the place the nest of party mutiny. What would Theresa Marchmain have thought?
I'm going there tonight.
Oh, not tonight, Charles. You can't go there tonight. Well, Daddy will think it so odd. And Boy's home for Sunday. And you haven't seen the new studio. Oh, you can't go tonight. Did they ask me?
Of course, but I knew you wouldn't be able to come.
Well, I can't now. I could have if you'd let me know earlier. Well, I do think you're beastly.
If you'd asked me to guess, Riders is the last name would have occurred to me. They're so virile, so passionate.
It had not been thus at my last exhibition in these same rooms. That same critic had previously stood before a painfully laboured canvas and said,
"So facile."
I remembered the exhibition too for another reason. It was the week I detected my wife in adultery. But that day, in this gallery, I suddenly realized that she was powerless to hurt me anymore. I was a free man.
No, I have not brought a card of invitation. I have not come to a social function. I have come to see you the pictures.
Antoine, come in.
My dear, there is a Gorgon here who thinks I am gate-crashing.
Thank you, it's quite all right. This gentleman is an old friend.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
I only arrived in London yesterday and heard quite by chance at luncheon that you were having an exhibition. So, of course, I dashed impetuously to the shrine to pay homage. Have I changed? Would you recognise me?
I would, and did.
Where are the pictures?
Charles!
Oh, do you know Anthony? Anthony Blanche, my wife Celia?
Of course, the exquisite Celia, sister to my old chum, Boy Mulcaster. I can see you wish to speak privately to your spouse. Then I shall explain your pictures to you.
What an extraordinary suit. Darling, I must go. It's been a terrific success, hasn't it?
I think so.
I'll think of something to tell them at home. But I wish it hadn't got to happen quite this way. Bye-bye, Charles.
Where, my dear Charles, did you find this sumptuous greenery? The corner of a hothouse at Trent or Turing?
Are they as bad as that?
My dear, let us not expose your little imposture before these good, plain people. Let us not spoil their innocent pleasure. Let us go before we upset the connoisseurs.
I can't go too far afield tonight. I have a train to catch.
That's all right. I know of a louche little bar quite near here. We will take our drinks and sit in the corner. You must remember, my dear, that here you are just as conspicuous and, may I say, abnormal, my dear, as I should be in Brats.
Would your friend care to rumble?
No, Tom, he would not. And I'm not going to give you a drink. Not yet, anyway.
Be like that.
That's very impudent youth. A regular little gold digger, my dear. Chin chin.
Oh, cheers. Well, what have you been up to all these years?
My dear, it's what you have been up to that we are here to talk about. I've been watching you.
Have you?
To be frank, dear Charles, I despaired of you. I am a degenerate old dodego, I said, and Charles, I speak of your art, my dear. Charles is a dean's daughter in flowered muslin. Imagine, then, my excitement at luncheon today. Everyone was talking about you, how you had broken away, my dear, gone to the tropics, become a Gauguin, a Rimbaud. Or you can imagine how my old heart leapt. Poor Celia, they said, after all she's done for him. He owes everything to her. It's too bad. And with Julia, they said, after the way she behaved in America just as she was going back to Rex.
So, my private life is common knowledge and tittle-tattle.
I'm afraid so, my dear. But I wanted to hear about the pictures. Oh, the pictures, they said. They're most peculiar. Not at all what he usually does. Quite barbaric. Downright unhealthy. I wanted to dash out of the house and leap in a taxi and say, take me to Charles's unhealthy pictures. I was all agog. And what did I find?
What did you find?
I found, my dear, a very naughty and very successful practical joke. It was charm again, playing tigers.
You're quite right.
Of course I'm right. I was right years ago. More years, I'm happy to say, than either of the shows. But I was right when I warned you.
Warned me?
I took you out to dinner to warn you of charm, and I warned you expressly and in great detail of the flight family. Charm is the great English blight. It spots and kills anything it touches. It kills love. It kills art. And I greatly fear, my dear Charles, it has killed you.
Poor Charles. You look worn out.
It's been a day of nightmare, ending up with half an hour's well-reasoned abuse of my pictures in a pansy bar. I think Celia knows about us.
Well, she had to know sometime.
Everyone seems to know. My pansy friend had not been in London 24 hours before he'd heard.
Damn everybody.
Two Christmases had passed, and now, on a summer's afternoon, Julia and I sat by the fountain.
Do you remember the storm?
How could I not?
The bronze doors banging.
The roses in cellophane.
Oh, and do you remember how the sun came out on our last evening, just as it has done today?
Mm.
How many days have there been since then when we haven't seen each other? 100, do you think?
Not so many.
2 Christmases.
And the 3 days of good taste before I followed you to Capri.
Our first summer. I went back to the villa and said, Papa, who do you think has arrived at the hotel? And he said, Charles Ryder, I suppose. He seems to have a penchant for my children. 100 days wasted out of our 2 years and a bit. Not a day's coldness or mistrust or disappointment.
Never that.
How many more? Another 100?
Lifetime.
I want to marry you, Charles.
One day. Why now?
War. This year, next year, sometime soon. I want a day or two with you of real peace.
Isn't this peace?
Marriage isn't a thing we can take when the impulse moves us. There must be a divorce. 2 divorces. We must make plans.
Plans, divorce, war. On an evening like this.
Sometimes I feel the past and the future pressing so hard on either side that there's no room for the present at all. Hello. It's late for 3.
Lord Brideshead arrived 30 minutes ago from London, my lady.
Bridie!
He sent a message, would you please not wait dinner for him, as he may be a little late.
What Brideshead did in London was a matter for speculation between us. All that he was known with certainty to have done was to form a collection of matchboxes.
If I was Rex, I should want to live in my constituency.
He says it saves 4 days' work a week not to.
I'm sorry, he's not here. I have a little announcement to make.
Bridie, don't be so mysterious. Out with it.
I'm engaged to be married. I hope you're pleased.
Bridie! How very exciting.
Yes, congratulations. Who are you engaged to?
No one you know.
Is she pretty?
I don't think you'd exactly call her pretty. Comely is the word I think of in her connection. She's a big woman.
Fat?
No, big. She's called Mrs. Muspratt. Her Christian name is Beryl.
Beryl?
I have known her for a long time, but until now she had a husband. Now she is a widow. Why do you laugh?
Oh, I'm sorry, it isn't the least funny. It's just so unexpected. Is she about your own age?
Just about, I believe. Oh. She has 3 children. She's not at all well off.
But, Bridie, where did you find her?
Her late husband, Admiral Ampleforth, collected matchboxes.
You're not marrying her for her matchboxes?
No, no. The whole collection was left to the Falmouth Town Library.
Does Papa know?
I had a letter from him this morning, giving me his approval. He has been urging me to marry for some time.
Well, I think this is very good news, Bridie.
Oh, yes. Yes, congratulations. Oh,
thank you. Thank you. I think I'm very fortunate.
But when are we going to meet her? Bridie, you sly, smug old brute. Why haven't you brought her here?
I couldn't do that.
Why? I'm dying to meet her. Let's ring her up now and invite her.
She has children. Besides, you are peculiar, aren't you?
What can you mean?
Beryl is a woman of strict Catholic principle, fortified by the prejudices of the middle class. It is a matter of indifference whether you choose to live with Rex or Charles or both. I have always avoided inquiry into the details of your ménage. But in no case would Beryl consent to be your guest.
Oh, pompous ass!
Oh, dear.
How dare he speak to you like that?
No. He's quite right. They know all about it, Bridie and his widow. One little, flat, deadly word that covers a lifetime. Sin.
Don't be silly, Julia. Bridie's a buffoon. He knows nothing about us.
Living in sin.
Poor Julia, they say. She can't go out. She's got to take care of her sin.
No, you don't believe that.
A word from so long ago. Cordelia and me with the catechism in Mummy's room before luncheon on Sundays. Mummy carrying my sin with her to church, bowed under it in the black lace veil, dying, with my sin eating at her more cruelly than her own deadly illness.
Julia.
Mummy dying with it. Christ dying with it, nailed hand and foot. Hanging over the bed in the night nursery, hanging in the dark church. Nameless and dead, like the baby they wrapped up and took away before I had seen her. Oh, Charles. Well, Bridie is a one for bombshells, isn't he?
Was it nice out? If I'd known you were going out, I'd have come too.
Rather cold.
I hope it's not going to be inconvenient for Rex moving out of here. In his letter, Papa proposed making over the whole estate right away.
I should think Rex will be sorry to go.
Oh, he'll find another bargain somewhere.
Later, when Brideshead had gone upstairs, Julia and I went outside again. The moon was high as we walked around the house.
You know, I won't believe that great spout of tears came just from a few words of Bridie's. You must have been thinking about it before.
Oh, hardly at all. Now and then. Well, more lately, with the last trump so near.
Of course, it's a thing psychologists could explain. The feelings of guilt from the nonsense you were taught in the nursery. You do know at heart that it's all bosh, don't you?
How I wish it was.
Sebastian once said almost the same thing to me.
He's gone back to the church, you know. Of course, he never left it as definitely as I did. I've gone too far. There's no turning back now. I know that. If that's what you mean by thinking it all bosh. All I can hope to do is put my life in some sort of order in a human way, before all human order comes to an end. That's why I want to marry you. I should like to have a child. That's one thing I can do.
We continued walking and found ourselves once again standing by the fountain.
It's like the setting for a comedy. Scene, a baroque fountain in a nobleman's grounds. Act one, sunset. Act two, dusk. Act three, moonlight.
Comedy?
Drama. Tragedy. Farce, what you will. This is the reconciliation scene.
Was there a quarrel?
Estrangement and misunderstanding in act two.
Oh, don't talk in that damned bounderish way. Why must you see everything secondhand? Why must this be a play?
It's a way I have.
I hate it.
Ow. All right. Go on, hit me again if it makes you feel better. Well?
Did it hurt?
Yes.
Your poor face. Will there be a mark tomorrow?
Yes, I expect so.
Charles, am I going crazy?
No.
What's happened tonight?
I saw her to bed. Her blue lids fell over her eyes. Her pale lips moved on the pillow. But whether to wish me good night or to murmur a prayer, I did not know.
And of course Celia will have custody of the children.
Of course.
Then what about the old rectory? I don't imagine you'll want to settle down with Julia bang at our gates.
No.
The children look on it as their home, you know. Celia's chum has got no place of his own till his uncle dies.
He can have the old rectory.
Right. Good.
Do you want another whiskey, boy?
Oh, yes. Thanks. Now, with regard to money, Celia and... Do you know Robin, by the way?
Oh, vaguely. A half-baked, pimply youth, as I remember him.
Oh, I wouldn't say that. Anyway, he and Celia naturally don't want to accept anything for themselves. But there's the question of the children's education.
Well, that'll be all right. I'll see the lawyers about it.
Well, I think that's everything. Cheers.
Cheers.
You'll find it very disturbing, you know, starting off again. How old are you?
34.
34? That's no age to be starting. You ought to be settling down. You made any plans?
Yes, I'm marrying again as soon as the divorce is through.
Well, I call that a lot of nonsense. To get rid of one wife and take up with another immediately is beyond all reason. Celia was always perfectly civil to me.
She is perfectly civil.
I had quite a liking for her, in a way. If you couldn't be happy with her, why on earth should you expect to be happy with anyone else? Take my advice, dear boy. Give up the whole idea.
I hope I'm a man of the world, Charles. I've had my own fish to fry, too. But a divorce is a different thing altogether. I've never known a divorce do any good.
That's your affair and Julia's.
Julia's set on it. What I hoped was you might be able to talk her round. But there's too much going on altogether at the moment, what with Bridie wanting me to clear out of the house. If she insists on a divorce, I suppose she must have it, but she couldn't have chosen a worse time. Tell her to hang on a bit, Charles. There's a good fellow.
This morning, I had another talk with the German Chancellor, Herr Hitler. And here is the paper which bears his name upon it as well as mine.
One afternoon in November, Julia and I stood at a window in the drawing room, watching the wind at work, stripping the lime trees.
A telephone message, my lady, from Lady Cordelia.
Cordelia? Where is she?
In London, my lady.
Wilcox, how lovely. Is she coming home?
She was just starting for the station. She'll be here after dinner.
Thank you, Wilcox.
My lady.
Do you know, I haven't seen her for 12 years. Not since the evening we dined together at the Ritz.
She's had an odd life. First the convent, then when that was no good, the war in Spain. I've not seen her since then. The other girls who went over with the ambulance came back when the war was over, but she stayed on. She's grown up quite plain, you know.
Does she know about us?
Yes. She wrote me a sweet letter.
It hurt to think of Cordelia growing up quite plain. It was odd, I thought, how the same ingredients, differently dispensed, could produce Brideshead, Sebastian, Julia, and her. She looked more than her 26 years, and hard living had roughened her.
Are you here to stay?
Yes. My job's over in Spain, but it looks as though there'll be plenty of the same sort of work over here soon.
It does rather look that way.
I saw Sebastian last month.
Did you?
Was he well?
Not very. That's why I went. I wanted him to come home with me, but he wouldn't. He's got a beard now, and he's very religious. I'll tell you more tomorrow. It's a long story. Is it too late to see Nanny?
Oh, no. She sits up till all hours with her wireless.
I'll go and say hello.
Poor Sebastian. Do you ever worry you might forget him?
Never. He was the forerunner.
I had not forgotten Sebastian. He was with me daily in Julia. Or rather, it was Julia I had known in him in those distant Arcadian days. How could I forget him?
A journalist in Burgos told me, a down-and-out called Flight, who people said was an English lord, had been taken in by the fathers at the monastery near Carthage.
You wish to see me, my son?
Yes, father. I'd like to put myself at your service.
I see. And what form will this service take?
Missionary work, father. I'll go anywhere you choose to send me. The further the better. Perhaps I could bring the word of our Lord to the cannibals.
We have no cannibals in our missions.
Pygmies, then? Pygmies would do, or just a primitive village somewhere on a river. Or lepers. Lepers would do best of anything.
We have plenty of lepers, but they live in our settlements with doctors and nuns.
I see. Perhaps lepers are not what I want. Is there not a small church by a river? Somewhere I could look after when the priest is away?
There are such churches.
Good.
Tell me about yourself.
Oh. I'm nothing.
You are not a young man.
I am younger than I look.
Forgive me, but you do not seem strong to me. Let me tell you about the training of our novices.
No, I don't want to be trained. I don't want to do things that need training.
My friend, you need a missionary for yourself.
Yes.
Sebastian kept going back 2 or 3 times a week, always drunk, until the superior gave orders he should be kept out. Then one day they found him lying outside the main gate, unconscious. He'd lain there all night. At first they thought he was merely drunk again. Then they realised he was very ill. So they put him in the infirmary, which is where I found him. He looked terrible, but he still had his old sweet manner. Most of what he said was about his German friend. He sounds gruesome.
Kurt, yes, he was.
They went to Greece, but Kurt got into a brawl with an official. Anyway, the Greeks didn't want him there and shipped him home to Germany, where he was put into a concentration camp. Then one day, Sebastian learned he had hanged himself. So he went back to Morocco.
Have you told Julia all this?
Well, the substance of it, not quite as I told you. She never loved him, you know, as we do.
Poor Sebastian. It's too pitiful. How will it end?
Everyone will know about his drinking, and he'll disappear for 2 or 3 days every month or so, and they'll all nod and smile. And then he'll come back shamefaced and be more devout for a day or two. Then one morning he'll be picked up at the gate, dying, and show by a mere flicker of the eyelid that he is conscious when they give him the last sacraments.
It's not what one would have foretold all those years ago in Oxford.
It's not such a bad way of getting through one's life.
I suppose he doesn't suffer.
Oh, yes, I think he does. But no one can truly become holy without suffering. And he's in a very beautiful place by the sea.
Oh. You knew I wouldn't understand.
You and Julia. Come on, let's go back to the house. When you met me last night, did you think, poor Cordelia, such an engaging child, grown up a plain and pious spinster full of good works? Did you think thwarted?
Yes, I did.
It's funny. That's exactly the word I thought of for you and Julia when I arrived. Thwarted passion.
My divorce case was due to be heard at the same time as Brideshead was to be married. Lord Marchmain, with a taste for the dramatically inopportune, which was plainly the prototype of his elder sons, declared his intention, in view of the international situation, of returning to England.
Welcome home, Papa.
Thank you, Julia. Must I be presented to the entire staff?
Of course not. A wave will do.
Cara?
I'm here.
Take my arm. I'd like to sit down. I'd forgotten how cold it is in England. Quite bold, Mirva.
Can I get you anything?
Nothing, thank you. Cara, where are those confounded pills?
Alex, the doctor said not more than 3 times a day.
Damn the doctor. I feel quite bowled over.
Very well. Here you are.
I'm afraid I'm not at all the thing today. The journey's taken it out of me. Ought to have waited a night at Dover. Wilcox, what rooms have you prepared for me?
Your old ones, my lord.
Won't do. Not till I'm fit again. Too many stairs. Must be on the ground floor. Linda, get a bed made up for me downstairs.
Very good, my lord. Which room shall we put it in?
The Chinese drawing room. And Wilcox, the Queen's bed.
The Chinese drawing room, my lord. The Queen's bed.
Yes, yes. I may be spending some time there in the next few weeks.
Lord Marchmain sat by the fire watching the bustle while we stood in a half circle and talked to him.
I dare say I shall not be really fit again until summer comes. I look to you four to amuse me.
Oh, we'll do our best. Shall I call for some tea?
Would you, darling?
A Brideshead and his wife dine with me in Rome. Since we are all members of the family, I can speak without reserve. I found her deplorable. Her former consort, I understand, was a seafaring man.
An Admiral Ampleforth, I believe.
And my son, at the ripe old age of 38, with a very free choice among the women of England, can have settled on, I suppose I must call her so, burial. Tell me the circumstances of Brideshead's courtship.
Well, I believe Bridie and Beryl's late husband shared a hobby in common.
A hobby?
And what form did this hobby take?
Matchboxes.
Matchboxes?
Brideshead has an extensive collection.
Matchboxes. I think she's past childbearing.
Ah, tea. Ah.
In Italy, no one believes there will be a war. I think it will all be arranged. I suppose, Julia, you have no longer any access to political information?
Oh, I'm afraid not.
Oh, pity. Cara here is fortunately a British subject by marriage. Not a thing she customarily mentions, but it may prove valuable. She is legally Mrs. Hicks, are you not, my dear?
Yes.
We know little of Hicks, but we shall be grateful to him, nonetheless, if it comes to war. And you will no doubt become an official war artist.
No, as a matter of fact, I'm negotiating now for a commission in the Special Reserve.
Oh, but you should be an artist. I had one with my squadron during the last war for weeks, until we went up to the line.
Your rooms are ready, if you'd care to see them, my lord.
Oh, yes. We must all see them.
Oh, yes. Now, if you will all leave me, I will go to bed. We will meet later. It looks very well. Does it not, Charles?
Very well.
You might paint it, eh? Call it the deathbed.
He has come home to die.
Poor Daddy.
His sickness is up and down. One day he's strong and lively, and then he's ready for death. Then he's down and afraid. The doctors in Rome gave him less than a year. There's someone coming from London, I think, tomorrow, who will tell us more.
What is it?
His heart. Some long word. He's dying of a long word.
It was natural, with her hospital experience, that Cordelia should take charge of her father. When the doctor came the next day, they gave their instructions to her, instinctively.
How long will it be, Doctor?
Lady Cordelia, there are men walking about in hearty old age whom their doctors gave a week to live. I have learned one thing in medicine. Never prophesy.
Oh, I've never been much moved by family piety until now. But I am, frankly, appalled by the prospect of burial, taking what was once my mother's place in this house. I will not disguise from you that I have taken a dislike to Beryl.
That has become apparent, Annie.
Is she really all that bad?
I don't think she'll be quite in her proper element here, do you? Who shall I leave it to? The entail ended with me, you know. Sebastian, alas, is out of the question. Who wants it? Chris? You like it, Cara?
Please, Alex.
No, of course you wouldn't. Cordelia? I think I shall leave it to Julia and Charles.
Of course not, Papa. It's Bridie's.
And Beryl. I have rather a fancy for the idea of installing Julia here. So beautiful this evening, my dear. So beautiful always. Much, much more suitable.
Shortly after this, he sent to London for his solicitor. But on the day he came, Lord Marchmain was suffering from an attack and would not see him.
Do you think he really means to leave it to us?
Yes, I think he does.
But it's monstrous for Bridie.
Is it? I don't think he cares much for the place. I do, you know.
I know, but...
He and Beryl would be much more content in some little house somewhere.
You mean to accept it?
Certainly. It's Papa's to leave as he likes. I think you and I could be very happy here.
The weeks of illness wore on. At Easter, Brideshead was called.
I've just been in to see Papa. He must see a priest.
Do you think he would?
I shall see that he does. I'll take Father Mackay in to him tomorrow, if you'll excuse me. There are one or two things I wish to speak to Wilcox about.
Julia.
I know what you're going to say.
Can we stop this tomfoolery?
Why should we? Anyway, what harm can it do?
Who knows?
Oh, Charles, I see great church trouble ahead.
Can't they even let him die in peace?
They mean something so different by peace.
It might alarm him, of course. On the other hand, I have known cases where it has had a wonderfully soothing effect on the patient.
But this patient has turned his back on religion.
Yes, really, I think it's a thing for Lord Brideshead to decide. Lord Marchmain is very weak today, but tomorrow he may be quite strong again.
Very well. Thank you, Doctor.
Not at all.
Well, he wasn't much help.
Help? I really can't see why you've taken it so much to heart that my father shall not have the last sacraments.
Because it's such a lot of witchcraft and hypocrisy.
It's been going on for nearly 2,000 years. I don't know why you should suddenly get into a rage now. What's it got to do with you or me whether my father sees his parish priest?
The German Chancellor, Herr Hitler, is said to be suffering.
Sorry to disturb you. Father, I've brought Father Mackay to see you.
Good morning, Lord Marshmere.
Father Mackay, I'm afraid you have been brought here under a misapprehension. I am not an extremist, and I have not been a member of your church for 25 years.
Bridie and I just thought you might...
Brideshead, show Father Mackay the way out.
I carried the news to Julia. The mumbo-jumbo was off. I felt triumphant. Truth had prevailed. But I was wrong in thinking that the religious controversy was quashed.
I presume he meant what he said. He meant that he had not been accustomed regularly to receive the sacraments, and since he was not at the moment dying, he did not mean to change his ways yet.
That's simply a quibble.
Why do people always think that one is quibbling when one tries to be precise?
I wish someone would explain to me quite what you think this priest can do. I mean, do you simply want to arrange it so that your father can have a Christian burial? Or do you want to keep him out of hell? I only want to be told.
Very well. Let's get this clear. In order to be reconciled, he must be contrite and wish to be reconciled. He has to make an act of will.
Brideshead explained it all to me at some length. Later, when we were alone, Julia said...
I wish you wouldn't start these religious arguments.
I didn't start.
You don't convince anyone else, and you really don't convince yourself.
I only want to know what these people believe. They say it's all based on logic.
Well, if you'd let Bridie finish, he would have made it all quite logical.
There were four of you. Kara didn't know the first thing about it. You knew a bit and didn't believe a word. Cordelia knew about as much and believed it madly. Only poor Bridie knew and believed, and I thought he made a pretty poor show when it came to explaining.
Oh, Charles, don't rant. I'll begin to think you're getting doubts yourself.
The weeks passed, and Lord Marchmain lived on. In June, my divorce was made absolute, and my former wife married for the second time. Julia would be free in September, but the nearer our marriage got, the more wistfully she spoke of it.
News that the Germans have bombed Częstochowa will have caused profound indignation among Poles all over the world.
Czechs make good coachmen.
Do they?
Nothing else.
shall I go on?
Oh, please do. If it's not boring you.
Częstochowa is the Lourdes of Poland. It is a centre of pilgrimage for Roman Catholic Poles, many of whom...
Shall I take over here?
Yeah, I'll just finish this piece in the paper, then.
Cordelia, what became of the chapel?
They locked it up, Papa, when Mummy died.
It was hers. I gave it to her. We've always been builders in our family. It was the last of the new house to come. Last to go.
While Cordelia was away in London for a day, Lord Marchmain became suddenly worse.
Poor Alex. He looks so terribly weak.
He may recover from the present attack. The only thing is not to disturb him. The least shock will be fatal.
Oh, I'm going for Father Mackay. Will you telegraph Bridie and Cordelia, Charles?
We must stop this nonsense.
My business is with the body.
But you said just now any shock would kill him. What could be worse for a man who fears death, as he does, than to have a priest brought to him, a priest he turned out when he had the strength?
I think it may kill him.
Then will you forbid it?
I've no authority to forbid anything. I can only give my opinion.
Good afternoon.
Oh, I wish Bridie and Cordelia were here.
Dr. Grant, would you repeat what you just said to me?
I said that the shock of seeing a priest might well kill him. Without that, he may survive this attack. As his medical man, I must protest against anything being done to disturb him.
Cara?
Julia, dear, I know you are thinking for the best, but you know, Alex was not a religious man. We mustn't take advantage of him now. He is weak to comfort our own consciences.
I'll go and see how he is.
If Father Mackay comes to him when he is unconscious, then he can be buried in the proper way, can he not, Father?
Father Mackay, you know how Lord Marchpane greeted you the last time you came. Do you think it possible he can have changed now?
Well, thank God by his grace it is possible. I've seen so many men and women die. I never knew them sorry to have me there at the end.
But they were Catholics. Lord Marchmain was never one except in name, at any rate not for years.
Christ came to call not the righteous, but sinners to repentance.
There's no change.
Now, Doctor, how would I be a shock to anyone? Do you know what I want to do? There's nothing alarming. I just want to ask him if he is sorry for his sins. I want him to make some little sign of assent. Then I want to give him God's pardon. Then, though that's not essential, I want to anoint him. It's nothing. A touch of the fingers, just some oil from this little box.
Oh, Julia, what are we to say?
Thank you for your advice, Doctor. I take full responsibility for whatever happens. Father Mackay, will you please come and see my father now? How is he, nurse?
You won't disturb him now.
Do you mean... No.
No, but he's past noticing anything.
Oh. Now, I know you are sorry for all the sins of your life, aren't you? Make a sign if you can. You're sorry, aren't you? Try and remember your sins. Tell God you are sorry. I'm going to give you absolution. While I'm giving it, tell God you are sorry you offended him. In nomine Patris et Filii Spiritus Sancti.
Oh God, if there is a God, forgive him his sins. If there is such a thing as sin, God, forgive him his sins. Please, God, make him accept your forgiveness.
Amen. The priest took the little silver box from his pocket and touched the dying man with an oil wad. Suddenly, Lord Marchmain moved his hand to his forehead.
Oh, God, don't let him do that. Don't let him wipe away the oil.
The hand moved slowly down his breast, then to his shoulder, and Lord Marchmain made the sign of the cross. It was over. We stood up. The nurse went back to the oxygen cylinder. The doctor bent over his patient.
Will you see Father Mackay out? I'm staying here for a little.
Julia remained in the Chinese drawing room until, at 5 o'clock that evening, her father died, proving both sides right in the dispute, priest and doctor. When at last Julia and I met alone, it was by stealth, like young lovers.
Here in the shadow, in the corner of the stair. A minute to say goodbye.
So long to say so little.
You knew.
Since this morning. Since before this morning, all this year.
I didn't know till today. Oh, my dear, if you could only understand... Then I could bear to part, or bear it better. I should say my heart is breaking if I believed in broken hearts. I can't marry you, Charles. I can't be with you ever again.
I know.
How can you know?
What will you do?
Just go on, alone. How can I tell what I'll do? You know the whole of me. You know I'm not one for a life of mourning. I've always been bad. But the worse I am, the more I need God. I can't shut myself out from his mercy. That's what it would mean, starting a life with you, without him. I saw today there was only one thing unforgivable. To start up a rival good to God's. Why should I be allowed to understand that and not you, Charles?
Julia.
Well, it may be a private bargain between me and God that if I give up this one thing I want so much, however bad I am, he won't quite despair of me in the end. Now we'll both be alone, and I'll have no way of making you understand.
I don't want to make it easier for you. I hope your heart breaks, but I do understand.
Morning.
Morning, sir.
Worst place we've struck yet. No facilities, no amenities, and brigade sitting right on top of us. The place belongs to a Lady Julia Flight. Used to be married to Mottram, you know, the minister for whatever it is. Report to the quartering commandant at 10:45 hours. He'll show you what we're taking over.
Sir?
Wonderful old place in its way, but it didn't knock it about too much. There's a caretaker and a couple of servants live at the top. They won't be any trouble to you.
No.
I'd advise you to use this for conferences.
I'm only here to clean up, sir.
Oh, well, you've got an easy job. Very decent fellows, the last lot. They shouldn't have done that to the fireplace, sir. There's another painted room outside under the pillars. Modern work, but if you ask me, the prettiest in the place.
Cooper, do you think I can safely leave you in charge of the work party for half an hour?
I was just wondering where we could scrounge some tea.
For Christ's sake, they've only just begun work.
They're awfully browned off.
Keep them at it.
Rightio.
Come in. Who's that? I can't see you properly in the gloom. Come closer.
Hello, Nanny.
Charles, what a lovely surprise. Oh, look at you in your uniform. Oh, come and sit by me. Oh. Did you listen to Mr. Mottram on the wireless last night?
No.
Very nasty he was about Hitler. I said to the girl Effie, who does for me, I said, if Hitler was listening and if he understands English, which I doubt, he must feel very small.
Have you heard from Julia?
From Cordelia, only last week. And they're together still, as they have been all the time, and Julia sent me love at the bottom of the page. Cordelia said they were looking forward to coming home after the war, which I'm sure we all are. Though whether I'll live to see it is another story.
Where's the work party, Hooper?
They had to go off to draw the bed straw. I didn't know till Sergeant Block told me. I don't know whether they're coming back.
Don't know? What orders did you give?
Well, I told Sergeant Block to bring them back if he thought it was worthwhile. I mean, if there was time before dinner.
It's nearly 12. You've been hotted again, Hooper. That straw was to have been drawn any time before 6.
Oh, Lord, sorry, Ryder. Sergeant Block said...
It's my own fault for going away. Fall in the same party immediately after dinner, bring them back here and keep them here till the job's done.
Right, yeah. I say... Did you say you knew this place before?
Yes, very well. It belongs to friends of mine.
It doesn't seem to make any sense. One family in a place this size. What's the use of it?
It's where my family live. Don't worry, they're all away. You won't have to meet them.
Well, I suppose brigade are finding it useful.
But that's not what it was built for, is it?
Perhaps that's one of the pleasures of building, like having a son. Wondering how he'll grow up. I don't know. I've never built anything. And I forfeited the right to watch my son grow up. I'm homeless, childless, middle-aged and loveless, Hooper.
Huh?
Now, go back to camp. Keep out of the CO's way and don't let on to anyone that we've made a nonsense of the morning.
Okay, Ryder.
There was one part of the house I had not yet visited. And I went there now.
The chapel showed no ill effects of its long neglect. The paint was as fresh and bright as ever. The Arnuvo lamp burned before the altar. I said a prayer, an ancient, new-learned form of words, and left. The builders did not know the uses to which their work would descend. They made a great house with the stones of the old castle. Year by year, generation after generation, they enriched and extended it. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Yet something quite remote from anything the builders intended has come out of their work and out of the fierce little human tragedy in which I played. A small red flame. The flame which the old knights saw from their tombs, which they saw put out. That flame burns again for other soldiers far from home. I found it there this morning, burning anew among the old stones. In the final episode of Brideshead Revisited by Evelyn Waugh, adapted for radio by Jeremy Front, Charles Ryder was played by Ben Miles. Sebastian was Jamie Bamber. Celia, Eve Best. Lord Marchmain, Edward Petherbridge. And Mr. Ryder, Benjamin Whitrow. Julia was Anne-Marie Duff. Brideshead, Toby Jones. Cordelia, Abby Ford. And Rex Mottram, William Hope. Anthony Blanche was Geoffrey Stretfield. Kara, Liza Sadovy, and Boy Mulcaster, Tom Smith. Wilcox was Andrew Wincott. Father Mackay, Jonathan Keeble. The Doctor, Sean Baker, and Nanny Hawkins, Anne Beach. The music was composed by Neil Brand. Brideshead Revisited was directed by Marion Nancarrow.